Hello, and welcome to the Legal Marketing 2.0 podcast. I am your host, Guy Alvarez, and today we're going to talk about what stories law firms should be pitching to the media. Our host today is my good friend, Joshua Peck. Josh is a nationally recognized leader in communications and public relations, and he has an award-winning record of working with clients, develop their profiles, champion their victories and expertise, and win renown for them via both traditional and new media. Josh is the founder and president of Law Firm Media Professionals, as well as the CEO of Woodridge Communications. Josh also has extensive in-house experience at several law firms, including Kirkland & Ellis, Hughes, Hubbard & Reed, and most recently for 14 years at Duane Morris. Welcome to the show, Josh.
Thank you, Guy. I'm delighted to be with you.
It is great to have you on board. So before we dive into the topic, tell us a little bit, how did you get into the world of PR and communications and law firms? How did you find yourself working with law firms?
Well, like a lot of people in public relations, I began as a journalist. I worked for the Gannett newspaper chain, which is still ever expanding. I was at the based in the Westchester, New York offices, and that was my longest journalism stint. From there, I became a political press secretary. I had begun to cover the political campaign of an aspiring congressman named Hamilton Fish III, and I offered myself to him as press secretary, and he took me. So I didn't know I was leaving journalism forever, but in fact, I was. I had various, Hamilton Fish lost his race, in fact, lost twice. The second time he was attempting to succeed his father, Hamilton Fish Jr. Older members of your audience might remember that that Fish was the first Republican to push for President Nixon's impeachment. So he came from a good line, but nevertheless failed to make it. And then I had a string of various PR and communications positions, mostly in general PR. And it was when I was at Rubenstein that I hit law firms for the first time and discovered that I really enjoyed working with lawyers, the challenges of the law, and the fact that the subject matter was really ranged from the basic to the esoteric and challenged me intellectually. So I anointed myself a legal specialist. And since then, I've worked almost exclusively with law firms in PR capacities. Again, as you just mentioned, mostly in-house, but also as a consultant now for the last year and a half or so.
You know, you've had a good long career. What have you seen as the biggest changes within the media landscape and how they have affected PR professionals in law firms?
Well, I think the biggest thing that's happened has happened on their side of the fence as opposed to ours, but it's very noticeable, and I'm sure I'm not breaking any headlines here. But the newsrooms, I'm sorry to say, are much smaller than they used to be. And I'm made keenly aware of this. I was on my college paper, the Michigan Daily, at the University of Michigan, which has a huge alumni network. And the people I graduated with have had great careers in journalism, but many of them are no longer in it, not for any failing on their part, but simply because the jobs aren't there. There are notable exceptions. I came out with Richard Burke, who was at the New York Times and now at a healthcare specialty publication in Boston. But Julie Rovner, who was at NPR for years, is the healthcare reporter, now works for a private foundation, though you still sometimes hear her on NPR, and so forth. It's just a very common pattern. And here in Philadelphia, where I live, the Inquirer, which had a teeming newsroom in its own large building on Broad Street when I arrived, has moved to much smaller quarters because the place had become an echo chamber, I'm sorry to say. And the business staff is truly skeletal now. There's no legal reporter and several other crucial beats aren't being covered full time. So what's happening here in Philly is happening in all the traditional newsrooms, I'm sorry to say. And that, of course, coming back to our side, it generates challenges for us. There are fewer reporters to pitch to. There's less space in the business sections. And sometimes there's no legal specialty reporter anymore. And so we have a much steeper challenge in getting even really good and interesting law firm news recognized and covered.
And so with the shrinking of the newsrooms at most major publications, do you feel that that's an advantage, a disadvantage to law firms that want to get their story out there? And on that, do you feel like law firms' expectations of the media and what it could do for them or get their story out. Has that changed as well?
Well, I'll give a two-pronged answer to that. One is that I'm afraid that the expectations, certainly at the leadership level at law firms, it's largely the same. I mean, they expect every litigation victory, large and small, to be covered somewhere. Sometimes they're not. They expect every deal, where, especially where the numbers are public, to be covered. Sometimes they're not. I think the threshold is much higher than it used to be for what certainly the general business media are interested in. So it's a bit of being between a rock and a hard place for the media relations professional. The good news is that some of the media outlets in our industry are the same and growing stronger even. Law 360, which to my surprise, it was born during the Great Recession with a couple of titles. I think IP Law 360 was first. I forget what was second, maybe bankruptcy or employment. And now it's many, many titles covering the country regionally and by practice group, by industry, and so on. And the staff seems to grow by the hour. So there's an online publication. There's never been a print edition of it that I'm aware of. I'm sure there hasn't. And it's since been bought by LexisNexis, of course. And it's really doing an admirable job of covering even some of those smaller litigation matters that have disappeared from what were the traditional media. I won't say mainstream, because I think Law 360 is pretty mainstream. So that's one thing. Another challenge, which has never really changed, is that some law firm leaders think that if the news doesn't please them, it shouldn't be covered. And of course, it's the job of the legal media to cover news, good or bad. And so you do run into a thing where, as the media relations professional, you find your boss, your client, basically, if you're outside, or your employer, if you're in, wondering why American Lawyer or the New York Law Journal or the Philadelphia Legal Intelligencer and so forth feel the need to cover this thing that displeases you, whereas in fact, from the point of view of the reader, that's the story of the day. Mm-hmm. And coming from a journalistic background, I don't fault reporters for covering news I don't like. I just want them to get it right. And if we have something to say about it, to represent what we have to say as well, I'll work with them on a story that's negative for my client in order to at least mitigate the damage. And sure, the notion that a journalist has done something bad if she writes something you don't like is self-defeating and wrong.
No, that makes perfect sense. So, you know, one of the things that I have learned working with law firms and lawyers is that they don't necessarily know, you know, how to make a story newsworthy, you know, how to make it attractive for a reporter to pick it up, how to package it in a way that there's actually some bit of news around there, not just, you know, self-boasting.
Right.
What do you think about that? And, you know, what can media professionals do in order to position it in the right way?
Well, on what I'm about to say, I think media relations professionals know this, but of course, some members of your audience are interested in media without necessarily specializing in it. Mm-hmm. So I'm addressing this to them as well. And if you start with a four-word question in response to any possible story idea, you'll be ahead of the game. And those four words are, who gives a damn?
I love it.
Because the fact that your lawyer has won an honor from her church or his synagogue or a civic group or is named a super lawyer or even best lawyers is probably not a huge story for a number of reasons. One being that 200 other lawyers received the same honor. Second, that nobody gives a damn. And three, what you're really doing is substituting a bad story for a good one. As I indicated at the beginning, there's limited amount of news space that any publication, even a legal one, is going to devote to any one law firm and certainly to any one lawyer. So my advice to people in my profession is to pick your gun very carefully. You want to make sure that it's true and that the aim is right. Sorry, I'm not a gun advocate, but it came to mind. So if you're entertaining putting a story out about something that most people won't care about, you shouldn't just shrug and say, well, I'll do it and then I'll have another opportunity. You may not. Once you've engaged a local reporter or a legal reporter with something that he or she doesn't really care about, you're going to have a harder and more resistant audience the next time. And I would suggest that you wait until a story is something that the public, or the business public at least, will really find engaging, that they can take advantage of in some way, whether financially or legally, that's the story you want to pitch, especially if you're dealing with a firm that isn't often cited or noticed in the media. And it may take weeks or months of waiting until you get the story you want.
Can you give us a couple of examples maybe of the types of stories that you should be pitching to the media?
Sure. Litigation between businesses is always interesting to somebody. The legal media generally will like it. Law 360 will generally write the story. But beyond that, you have trade media, which are so crucial because the people in the boardrooms aren't reading the legal media. They read the publications or the Bibles, if you will, of their industries. So if you have two insurance companies fighting, you want to talk to Crane's Business Insurance magazine based in Chicago, but with reporters all over. And if you can get that litigation fight noticed in business insurance, then your name is going to come to mind for an insurance company that doesn't know you, but will know who you are the next time you arrive with a prospect package under your arm. So I look for litigation matters that really count, and not necessarily just when the verdict is in, because there's a slightly greater element of risk here. But if you begin to tell the reporter what's going on while the trial is ongoing, you're going to have that much more of a friendly audience when the verdict comes in. The risk, right, of course, is that you lose the case and then you've drawn attention to a matter which ends up being problematic. But frankly, I often think it's worth the risk. The fact that you represented a client in a significant matter is in itself a selling point, win or lose.
Right, right.
So that's an example. And on the deal side, too, you represent one of two public companies engaged in a merger or acquisition. By definition, the selling price is a public matter. It affects the stock market. It affects investors. You mm-hmm. should be talking about that deal, if not while it's ongoing, which of course may indeed be a secret, but certainly the moment that it becomes public, it would be great if the person at the law firm is the first person to share the news with the Wall Street Journal or with the business pages of the local general newspaper.
That's great. So on a previous episode of the show, we had Hank Greslick from ALM.
Whom I know well.
I know you know well. And so Hank had a bit of advice for marketing and PR people at firms, which is, you know, don't be afraid to reach out and actually schedule a meeting or schedule a chat to talk about, you know, the firm and the areas of practice that they cover. I mean, what do you think about that? Do you think that's a good idea? Do you recommend that to in-house people that have to deal with the media to set up those kinds of meetings or calls?
I do recommend get acquainted meetings. I think it's great. If the media are willing to take the time over lunch and get to know your lawyers, it's great. Mm-hmm. I do have a caveat, and I don't remember whether Hank mentioned this or not. Mm-hmm. I think it's wise. You don't want to show up and say, I'm a bankruptcy lawyer. Here's what bankruptcy lawyers do. A, they know. And B, it's not very interesting. So what I tell my clients to do is for each to arrive with anecdotes, stories about matters they've handled that have a beginning, a middle, and usually an end. Right. The only reason they wouldn't have an end is if they're ongoing, of course. And rather than explain what a bankruptcy lawyer is, explain what you, the bankruptcy lawyer, did in the course of bringing company B into and out of Chapter 11. What did it look like? What were the challenges I faced? That's a much better story to tell a reporter. It sticks in memory much better than simply explaining what an area of the law is. And I know from experience that when the reporter gets back to her newsroom and says, let's see, where am I going to find an expert who understands how that Chapter 11 guy. Right. And the reporter will get a call without the help of the media relations professional because the reporter has already committed the lawyer's details to the database and so forth. The person's right there for them to call. And that's great.
That's great advice. I like that a lot.
So everybody shows up with a story or two. That's my rule.
And stories are, you know, people remember stories more than anything else. I think that's
you know
great
it
advice.
Better than most, Guy, from the work you do in social media.
Right? Absolutely. Absolutely. So I've heard you talk before and you talk about saying no. Tell me a little bit more about that. What do you mean by no?
Well, I've been hinting at it in the last few minutes, which is to say when the client or lawyer comes to you and says, I have a great story idea. I want to be covered for this honor I got from the American College of Bankruptcy Lawyers. With an eye on a limited amount of interest and energy that any one reporter is going to have for any one lawyer, if I'm free to do so, and in general, with my level of seniority, I am, I like to turn around and say, not exactly no, but more like no, but that's not the best story we can pitch for you. Can you tell me what's on your desk right now? I continue. Let's talk about the files and struggles you're dealing with for your clients, because in there is a story that you will enjoy in that it will get you noticed in a way you want to be seen. The lawyer who gets things done, the lawyer who is figuring a way out of a difficult situation for a litigation, bankruptcy, corporate, or employment client. Tell me a story about a labor strike, which you help solve from the legal point of view. So the answer is not no, but no, but. And I really think it's not only the opportunity, but the responsibility for a marketing or media professional to find the best story to pitch, not the one that happens to come to mind of the client. We're supposed to be the experts when it comes to interacting with the media.
And so for those more junior in-house people that have problems saying no or no, but, any suggestions?
Well, one thing you do is strengthen your game by attending the many professional growth opportunities that you have. You can't come back and claim to be an expert. But what you can say is, listen, I've been speaking to two or three people who among them have 35 years of experience doing this. And they tell me that what works best is fill in the blank. Right. But the usual answer is come to the media with something you've accomplished as opposed to something that a crown or an honor that somebody lay on your head. I think that will be best for the firm. That's my recommendation. And sometimes you'll be turned to and say, no, do what he says. So then you do what he or she says, obviously. But certainly strengthen your hand, and you have Legal Marketing Association everywhere in the country, active, doing webinars, doing in-person meetings, and some of those meetings interact with the media. And then the group I started 15 years ago, which is Law Firm Media Professionals, active in New York, Washington, occasional meetings in Boston, and elsewhere. So anybody listening who doesn't know what that is, look at our skeletal website, which is lfmp.org. That's Law Firm Media Professionals, or simply get in touch with me and I'll brief you.
And we'll put that information on the show notes. So that's great.
I appreciate it.
Let me ask you a question. So some of the listeners that we have on the show are from, you know, not huge law firms, not AMLA 100, you know, more smaller law firms. And many of them may not have an in-house media professional. Let me ask you a question. Right. Let's say I'm the managing partner of a law firm and I'm trying to decide, should I hire someone in-house or should I work with a consultant like you? Like, what kind of advice would you have to a smaller firm that nonetheless may have some, you know, need for media relations work?
My guess, I don't know where the exact cutoff is, Guy, but there is a firm so small that a media relations professional would not be engaged full-time in just PR, just media relations. So it's probably somewhere around 150 to 200, somewhere in that range. So there are two things to do with that. One is to have a media relations person who also does other kinds of communications work, helps the social media feed of the law firm going, create content. If the person's a good writer, they could be ghostwriting articles for attorneys, and I hope we'll speak about that in a moment. Or, of course, you have the opportunity to work with the many excellent PR firms, small and large, that work with lawyers. And there are quite a few firms that work with nobody but lawyers, so their expertise is excellent. Several of them help support my network, Law Firm Media Professionals, so I know them well. And in fact, five of them spoke at my most recent meeting in May. So the professionals are out there. That's what Woodridge Communications, the giant one-man operation I run, does. So the people are there to work with, and it can be, you know, for as little as 5, 10, 15 hours a month, even at an hourly rate, which is going to be quite affordable for most of us. Mm-hmm. And you just work with the stories. As a matter of fact, I have a firm right now that has an excellent marketing professional in the lead role. I've known her for years through Legal Marketing Association, and they frankly have not had much news generating type activity and have no history with working specifically on PR. But now they're in court on a big trial, and that's when they called me and said, can you get involved? Because we want to make as much of this as possible. So we're beginning to work together. And that's probably the right approach for them, because probably in January, February, or March, I too might not have been able to find anything to bring to the media, but there definitely is something now, and they weren't spending money for no coverage then, but now they're prepared to spend some.
Got it. So you mentioned ghostwriting for lawyers. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, a very good way to reach out to the general business public is for a lawyer to tell that public something that they will want to know, need to know, either to protect their legal or financial interests, which go together. So I look for articles that will be interesting to a general business leadership. And what's refreshing about this guy is that the simpler the argument and the story is, the better it is. So yeah. The kind of article I'm talking about takes less time than a treatise for a legal journal or for a law school publication. Basically, the best article identifies a business problem or opportunity, gives a little bit of history, not much, a paragraph or two, talks about the solution, which is probably legal, something to do with lawyers, for the next few paragraphs, and closes off with a happy ending. And you're done. It does not have a citation in it. If it mentions a case, it's only in passing. There are no footnotes. And the reader reads this piece and knows what she is supposed to do with the information because it's right there in the article. So I have ghostwritten many such articles for my lawyers at my various firms and among my various clients. There are good people out there who do nothing but ghostwriting, many of them former practicing lawyers themselves. And these are great resources because there's no reason not to seize what little news space there is. And by the way, of course, Law 360 is among the publications that uses outside content from lawyers. Yep. And seize the moment. You get a reprint, you can send it through the universe through Twitter and LinkedIn.
Yeah, no, absolutely. All right, one last question before I let you go, because I know you're a busy man. Social media, obviously, you know, the proliferation of social media platforms has had an impact on PR at law firms. What, in your opinion, are the best way to use the social media platforms?
You're the expert on many of these, so I will defer to you on some. But I will start with a basic rule of content, which I've already stated. Mm-hmm. Whether it's a 17-word tweet or a 2,000-word article, start with who gives a damn.
Yeah.
What I don't like to see, because it looks so self-serving, is any post that begins, "I am honored to," because there's a person talking about him or herself and something that's just been conferred on him or her, and the rest of the world isn't going to give a damn. So I would like to start from, okay, what would we like to tell them, and why should they care? Not why do I care, why should they care? And if you don't have a solid 5 or 10 word answer for that, you're barking up the wrong tree, because your email and mine and my Twitter feed and so forth are clogged with things that I don't care about. And I am looking for the person who regularly tells me things I do care about. So I want to be that person, and I want to teach my lawyers to be that person. Okay. As far as how to interact with the media, of course, the reporters are all on Twitter. Some of them see it as a primary place to get information that they will expand into stories. So use Twitter to link to longer, interesting content that will engage not only the reporter, but of course her readers, and LinkedIn the same. Facebook, I see, is primarily still a social realm. So that's where you talk about the church honor or some of the other things we've been talking about that are less newsworthy, because it's a way to connect with people in a more personal way. So the charity activities of lawyers, I think, are perfectly appropriate for Facebook, provided that the reader will care as opposed to just the lawyer.
Absolutely agree with that. All right, great. Well, unfortunately, we have run out of time. But before I let you go, any words of advice for our audience out there? If you want to leave them with something that you have learned over your many years working with law firms.
Well, in the interest of both brevity and my own rule, I will leave with two forward phrases, one of which I've said twice now. For a third repetition, which is good pedagogical practice, that would be, who gives a damn? And then, second line, or maybe first, is keep it simple, stupid, which is also not written by Joshua Peck, but an excellent idea. If you can't explain something rather quickly, you're not going to connect with your reader. And there really are some stories that are too complex to use the media to express. That's what a white paper is for, something you would issue and where you have complete control of thousands of words of content. As far as most of the media we've been talking about, and I would include video, which we didn't touch on, if you don't have a very simple story to tell with one or two message points, then find another medium, because you want to keep it real simple. You do not need to jam everything you know about energy law into one broadcast, podcast, or tweet.
Absolutely agree. Thank you so much for that. And thank you for being on the show. To our listeners, thank you for listening today. I hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you want to make sure you don't miss any future episodes, go to goodtobesocial.com/podcast. There you can subscribe and also check out some of our past episodes. So, Josh, thanks again for your time. And everyone, we will see you next time.
Thank you, guys.